the speakers blaring in that new McLaren. I'm starting on my day with that glacier blue McLaren. Gucci man, my status international. Calm, real calm, but my shooters are irrational. Had my shirt off, foreigns, internationals. She exotic, but I like it when it's natural. I'm not regular, nah, I'm not typical. It's so challenging to them, it's not difficult. I'ma keep a trill with you, want a billion. First 100 million, nah, it's not difficult. It's the night, my jewelry shining bright. These haters finish lighted, cause they know it's different prices.
What's up? What's good with it, everybody? We back again for another episode of the Pick and Roll Podcast. Sam, what's good?
What's good, world? We back.
Yeah, let's go ahead and jump right into it with our Pick and Roll Podcast fan poll of the week. Now, this week, it was a little different. This week, we decided to do more of a player comparison, and we decided to do John Wall and Damian Lillard. Now, our Facebook followers, they had to say that Damian Lillard was their pick. And that was by a score of 66% Damian Lillard, 34% John Wall. Instagram went in the other direction as they did last week, with John Wall getting 60%, Dame Lillard getting 40%. Sam, between the two, who's your pick? Who you got, John Wall or Dame Dollar?
I'm taking Dollar Dame.
I
like the buckets. I know that John Wall is a pure point guard. He's very athletic and whatnot. But to me, Damian Lillard is the closest guy to a Steph Curry in the NBA as far as efficiency from deep off the dribble. So that's why I would lean towards Dame Lillard being compared to John Wall. More court spacing.
I do. I like it. I like it when you break it down in that aspect. Another great aspect that one of our followers said was that Dame has made an All-NBA team, I believe, 3 times or something like that. And that's being in that Western Conference with all of those tough guards. And their point was that if he was in the East, he would be the runaway for the best guard in the East. And I couldn't really dispute that. I couldn't dispute that at all. But my pick was John Wall just for the simple fact that Dame can fill it up. But I feel like every other aspect of the game, it leans toward John Wall. He's a much better defender. He's a better facilitator. Obviously a better rebounder as well. But when it comes to Dame, I feel like the biggest thing that stands out to me outside of him getting the buckets, because he can definitely get the buckets any given night. But outside of that, the biggest thing that stands out to me is his defense. It's the fact that guards, for some reason, have an extremely high field goal percentage and scoring output when guarded by Dame Lillard. And that's extremely alarming to me. Obviously, he's not the greatest defender, but I just think that it's extremely odd that guys have career high nights on him on multiple occasions.
Everybody except Steph, because he posts his career highs on John Wall.
Steph's an outlier. He's the guy that he gets his career nights on anybody.
John Wall, I'm not that good of a defender either, to be honest. He's a better defender than Dame Lillard for sure, but he's not a good defender either.
I think he's a good defender. By these NBA standards, I believe he's
a good defender when comparing him to Dame Lillard. But as far as defending point guards, I don't feel like his name comes up.
I feel like out of
shit off the glass,
I think out of elite point guards, he's definitely in the upper echelon as far as defending is concerned.
Yeah, I could definitely say that, because none of the top point guards play a lick of defense.
Yeah, that's more the comparison I was given. I wasn't. I definitely don't want our listeners to think I'm calling John Wall a defender, but he's definitely a better defender than most other guys of his caliber as far as point guards are concerned. But yeah, man, that was a pretty close one. It went down to the wire. Actually, when it ended this morning, I went to go check it in. last night it was neck and neck, and this morning Dame pulled away on Facebook and John Wall pulled away on Instagram. So it was good to see our fans interact. This was probably the most votes we've had in a while, along with another segment that we added, but we'll get to that a little later. But yeah, man, it was good to see our listeners chiming in and letting us know how they felt. But let's jump to the next topic, man.
Hold on. Real quick before we go one, man. Hey, Villanova really having some growing pains, bro.
Man, I tried to tell you. I was alarmed by them early losses.
Hey, they are down by 4 with 6 minutes to go to Penn right now. I mean, did I say 6 minutes?
No, I don't know.
6 seconds left.
Oh, it's over.
Yeah, it's a wrap. They just lost the Penn.
Oh, man. That kind of sucks, too, because that's something I was going to touch on a little later. But, that's ugly. But, yeah, man, jumping into our next topic, speaking of growing pains, there's a NBA team who's going through similar sorts, not to this extent, but I would say more of an individual, and that individual is Joel Embiid. He has said in an interview that he's grown frustrated with his role since acquiring Jimmy Butler. Do you think that this particular, frustration or the way that he's feeling, do you think that could be a potential problem for them moving forward?
Initially, I did. But the more I kept, researching the situation, I realized that it was really more about Joel Embiid being frustrated at the fact that he had to sit out that night. That's more of the issue.
Mm.
They were about to play the Pistons, and we all know him and Drummond got their little
beef
or whatnot. And the organization wanted to rest Embiid, get him some rest because he's been playing heavy minutes or whatnot. And then later on that night, he was asked that question. I think it was in the post game. And then he goes on that rant or whatever. Mm. And then he actually released a statement a couple of hours ago. And he was saying how everybody blew it out of proportion or whatever. He's happy with the team. He's happy with the organization. He basically squashed it all. And I feel like he was just more frustrated with the fact that he wasn't able to play against somebody he really wanted to play against. And it's ironic that he squashed it. I think they either played the Pistons tonight or they played them last night.
Mm.
And he played.
Okay. See, I'm glad you shine some light on that because I wasn't aware of that. I pretty much thought just pretty much how everybody else is going to take the situation is that he was growing frustrated that Jimmy Butler was becoming a focal point of that offense, especially down the stretch. And
see, that's not even what he had initially really even said. He really was saying he doesn't like the way he's being used.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying they're using him on the perimeter more.
That's true.
The reason why they're having to do that is because now with Butler handling the ball more, you've got Ben Simmons off the ball more.
And he needs to be.
There's literally nowhere else you can put Ben Simmons but in the paint. And you can't have two guys down there. So you put Embiid out there because he's shooting better from the three. But Embiid's post touches by analytics, they haven't went down at all. So, yeah, that also lets you know. It was just one of those situations where you just got to read between the lines and know the whole situation before you just take the player's words. Because he ain't mean that shit, man.
Yeah, if you take it from that standpoint, with everything that you broke down, I don't think it's a big deal at all. Prior to you breaking that down, I was definitely thinking this could be a big deal because now that means that they have to completely, alter the way that they've been running things, and now Jimmy may not feel as comfortable as he did prior. But yeah, now that you shine some light on it, I don't think that it's an issue. I don't think that it's an issue at all. And like you said, the fact that he's still getting the same amount of touches in the post, I don't think it's an issue, but I do think that it can become an issue if they don't figure out a way to implement Ben Simmons more than just having him in a post. Because, yes, Ben Simmons is effective in the post, but Joel Embiid is hands down the most effective player on that team in the post. So if anybody needs to be in the post consistently, it's him. And I do understand Ben Simmons being a matchup nightmare most times, having smaller people guarding him, so he needs to be in the post as well. But I personally like Ben Simmons more on ball. I think he's extremely effective with the ball in his hands. Not to say that Jimmy Butler isn't, but Ben Simmons just does a far better job of getting everybody else involved as well.
Yeah, I agree 100%. But yeah, Ben, I mean, Joel Embiid, man, he's fine. Although I do believe that he really does have an issue with the fact that they are playing him like a stretch five. I think that was true, what he said about him being mad about how they're using him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that was the base of his frustrations that night. I think he really was mad because they weren't going to let him play, and he wanted to play bad against Andre Drummond.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, because if you really think about it, Joel Embiid has never been a guy to bite his tongue at all anyway.
So about anything.
If he really felt some type of way about the way the team has been ran since Jimmy Butler came, he would have said just that. He would have said, yeah, I'm not really rocking with the way that, you know, they're running things with him being the focal point or with me being a stretch five. I felt like it would have been petty for him to come out and say, I'm mad because I ain't getting a play. And y'all know me and him don't really like each other anyway. I felt like that would have been petty for him to actually come out and say the real reason. So this was his best way of getting some attention without it being exactly what he was trying to say. Because everybody would be like, okay, now you being extra, bro. Just chill out. All of the games. Exactly. So I think moving forward, they'll adjust and make sure that, you know, everything's taken care of. And now that he's come out and made a statement about it, I don't think that it's that big of a deal. So, yeah, I feel like Philly will be fine. They'll be fine moving forward. But moving on, another issue that I guess occurred with the media pertaining to an NBA star would be Kevin Durant. For those who don't know, Kevin Durant has made comments about superstars playing with LeBron, basically saying that the Lakers are going to have a lot of trouble finding another superstar to play alongside LeBron, mostly because they'll have to change the way that they play. They'll have to alter their game. And one of the players that he mainly singled out was Kawhi. And basically what he said was Kawhi's a guy that likes to dominate the ball as well. He likes to control the game. He also likes to post up. He likes to do a lot of things where he's in control of the offense. And basically what he's saying is if you send him down there with LeBron, he's not going to have the luxury of being who he is. Hence, he's going to have to change his game. Now, with the guy like KD making this statement, obviously is going to get blown out of proportion more than anybody else. For the simple fact that it's KD, the media loves to stir the pot when it comes to KD, as well as the fans. Everybody has this vendetta against him. So obviously it's going to sound worse. But me personally, I agree 100%. It's going to be extremely challenging for another superstar to play alongside LeBron and still be able to play their particular game. What's your thoughts on that?
We had this talk once again in our famous group chat that we talk about all the time. And, yeah, I agree with KD. And I don't think there was any hating involved at all. I think, if anything, I think Sauce was the one who said it, saying basically this was like a little bit of recruiting on KD's part for next season, which I could definitely see that. Like maybe saying, like, Kawhi, you go play with Bron. You have to change your game, but you see me and Steph over here.
That's true.
Change nothing.
I could see
it being like a recruiting thing, but as far as like some people really feel like KD is hating on LeBron. Like what?
Why like though? What? Like what does he have to hate on?
For what? Why is he hating on LeBron? That's what I don't understand.
And how could this even be considered? I understand people want to try to throw shade at KD any way that they possibly can, but what good is going to come out of this for KD if this was considered hating? Like, how is this going to make him feel better about himself? Or I don't know. I don't really see this as a hating tactic either. I don't see if you put yourself in a mindset of a hater, I really don't understand what could come of this that would be good. I don't get it at all. We know KD doesn't like attention, so it couldn't be that. And to me personally, it's a little bit of what you said, the recruiting thing, but I took it a step further when I heard it. It wasn't so much as a recruiting thing. It was more of a competition thing. He knows that if Kawhi goes to the Lakers, this is another team in the West that they got to worry about. You think about it from the aspect of him saying, you know what, Kawhi, you go there, you're going to have to change your game, bro. I don't know if that's the move for you. With that, you know, go ahead.
The reason why I'm leaning to the way I am is because now it's been more rumblings of KD going to LA, mm-hmm. but not the Lakers, though. They saying now he talking Clippers, and you know,
and that's where they was making moves for Kawhi too. So yeah. If you look at it from that aspect, that makes a lot of sense.
I've been seeing a lot of people talking about, like, when I say a lot of people, I'm not talking about like social media people. I'm talking about like analysts and stuff.
Yeah,
I'm seeing that now. The rumblings are that the Clippers are the front runner, and then the Warriors is second. And they saying that New York is like a big ass smoke screen.
Mm.
That's what I'm hearing now. But
I mean, that's not necessarily a bad position, seeing as the Clippers with them, I feel like now they look decent. They look much better than most people would expect them to. But I feel like as the season progresses, they'll start to drop off, and we'll start to see them move toward getting a lottery pick this year. And with the way that the college basketball scene looks right now, this next draft class is going to be pretty loaded. So if you think in regards of the Clippers, you know, dropping some games and basically tanking the second half of the season to get a lottery pick, they pull in a big-time draft pick, grab somebody like, who knows, say a R.J. Barrett, anybody. Somebody that they know can make them look more appealing for a guy like a KD or a guy like Kawhi. Now we're in a completely different situation. And I feel like now that you bring that up, that makes a lot of sense. Because obviously we've all heard about Kawhi and him wanting to be in L.A., but the rumblings were coming about that the Lakers weren't that L.A. team that he was going to be looking at next year. So if that's the case for KD now as well, yeah, man.
Yeah, the Clippers are supposed to have like $40+ million available this summer, and then they're going to have more contracts that they can move to create more money too.
That makes a lot of sense. So I don't know. I mean, I guess we both had the same take from him. We both agree with KD's comments for one. And for two, I don't believe it's hating, and you don't either. So
let me say this too. For everybody who just love Bron so much that they can't see this. These aren't comments that are just coming from nowhere that we don't have actual evidence for.
It's history. You can see it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we've literally seen it. Wherever LeBron goes,
somebody has had to change their game.
Like, people really thought Chris Bosh was a bum in Miami. I used to have to really remind people that Chris Bosh was a dog.
Animal. He was an animal in Toronto. And that's the number one guy outside of Kevin Love, because I feel like Kevin Love's wasn't solely on LeBron. It had a lot to do with LeBron, but I feel like Chris Bosh took the largest hit out of anybody that LeBron's played with as far as completely changing his game. Because he, like you said, he was a dog, and a lot of people were looking at him when he got to Miami as in, he part of the big three, but man, he ain't really holding his weight like he was supposed to. And people who haven't watched, the biggest thing from that was people didn't really watch enough Chris Bosh. Like, they may have watched basketball, but they did not watch Toronto and watch Chris Bosh and see the specimen that he was in his prime. He was an animal.
Could nobody do nothing with that guy?
Animal. That's why when they all teamed up, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, what is the NBA going to do with this? Like, this is really about to be crazy.
LeBron turned Bosh basically into who?
Rashard Lewis?
Yeah. Like, he literally only got to shoot the ball. In the playoffs, he got certain possessions where he could get some post touches because the game slowed down. But really, Bosh really didn't get a chance to be who he really should have been able to be. It's not taking nothing away from LeBron. He's his greatness, but he definitely makes players change their game.
That's a fact. And like I said, Kevin Love's also one. And I mean, it just, it's like you said, it's not a knock on LeBron. It's just those, LeBron's the alpha dog on any team that he's going to be on. So you better believe that if anybody's on that roster, their game's going to have to complement his. And that's just basically what KD is saying. Like we both said, it's not nothing crazy. It's not nothing outlandish. It's not no type of hate. He's saying what everybody else who is seriously into basketball already knows. It wasn't nothing crazy. He just answered a question. He answered it completely honestly. So I don't know. I feel like it was it was blown out of proportion, but at the same time, I think that it wasn't, because it's KD. Anything KD says is going to be taken to a completely different level. And that's just how it is with him. So I don't think it's that big a deal. But, yeah, man, that to me was self-explanatory. But switching gears, let's talk about something that me and you have – we actually been talking about for about the last hour or so. For those who have seen, I'm pretty sure everybody has seen, because it's pretty much become viral and everybody's making a joke out of it, is the video of DeMarcus Cousins. Believe the post said something about Boogie said that he's ready, but now he out here looking like LaVar Ball. That particular video has sparked a lot of, backlash, whether it be positive or negative. And with you being a Warriors fan, you shine some light on something earlier, which I guess I kind of understood. But the more I watched the fully extended video that you talked about, I don't know, man. Matter of fact, before we get too deep in it, is there a reason for people to be concerned with the way Boogie looked after watching that video?
Man, no, there's no reason to be concerned. Like, I just don't – I'm not seeing what everybody else is seeing, I guess. I don't know. Because to me, he looks extremely healthy. He looks explosive. He's moving well. I'm not seeing what everybody's seeing. I mean, I see that he was running funny. But to me, it looked like one of them drills the Warriors be doing, man. They do crazy shit. Even in that video, you can see KD in the background hopping from one elbow to the next on one leg. Three times, boop, 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 shoots a jumper. Like, they just do – they do crazy things just to test their balance. And another thing is Boogie has never been an extremely graceful runner in the first place. Like, after we had the conversation, which is why I told y'all I ain't feel like getting into it, because it's going to be a big, long, drawn-out conversation.
Right.
I was watching some clips from him when he was at the Kings, man. When he gets in the open court, he's just not a graceful guy. He's not a gazelle. He's out there running like an elephant. He can't change directions well. Like, yeah, he's athletic, but footwork is not all that great. I mean, shit, I don't know. That's my take on it right there.
I'm with you. I feel you, because Boogie, like you said, he's never been the sharpest guy on his toes. But that video was definitely alarming to me, because it almost looked like he was hobbling back and forth. Now, to take it a step further, you did say that that's a drill that they do to test balance. So I understood that. Go ahead.
If he's hobbling back and forth, why wasn't he doing that he ran through the rest of the video. Why wasn't he
doing that? And that's exactly what I want to touch on. I did see the hobbling back and forth in that particular drill, but that wasn't even what stood out most to me. What stood out most to me was the fact that this is a guy, DeMarcus Cousins, who we talked about, I believe, two episodes ago. You brought up the fact that he said he'll be ready to go. He's ready to go, and he'll be ready to go in 2 weeks. That 2 weeks is pretty much upon us now.
Yeah, he's ready, though. They just keeping him out as precaution. That's
and
what I'm saying.
That's the thing. After watching that video, the full-length video, not that little clip, the full-length video that you posted, which we'll post on our Pick and Roll Podcast Facebook page here soon. The thing that stood out most to me was Boogie. He's never been the type of guy who could elevate a lot to begin with. Now he looks even worse, even on little things like the way that him and Draymond were both coming down the middle of the lane shooting the floaters. He couldn't get off the ground.
But you got to also think about it, though. He's not warming up as hard. This is a warm-up before a game. This wasn't like practice. He just was participating in the game warm-up. Draymond's getting ready. Draymond's about to play in one of his first games back in a while. Draymond trying to get loose. Boogie just out there just bullshitting for real.
I'm not buying that because he was doing the elastic band and all of that.
That was a different game.
Okay. I thought that was the same clip. Okay, that makes more sense then. But yeah, that I wasn't too concerned about the jumpers or his effort. It was literally his elevation. I understand that. Yeah, you don't go through the motions as hard as you would when you're about to play in a game. But even with that being said, there was not one floater nor shot attempt that I saw where he looked like he was elevating at all. And to me, that's alarming because I'm the type of person that I need to see it in order to believe it. And I'm not saying that he's not ready, but based off of what I've seen, he's not ready. He cannot go out here and contribute to an NBA team right now with the clips that I've seen.
I ain't seen nobody say that he looked unhealthy besides people on social media. And I watched the whole – I have not heard one person say he looked – I've seen a couple people on TV say he looked like he's in shape and everything, like ready to go. I swear to God. I have not seen anybody say that he wasn't ready besides people on Facebook.
I'm telling you, I don't see it at all. Not one person, bro. I don't see it at all. I don't really look too much into the comments or what other people are saying on a post or anything like that. But based off of what I've seen, period, yeah, man, I don't know. He still got a ways to go, if you ask me. He looks like he's probably about a month or so off schedule or a month or so away from being able to step on that court and actually play. Granted, when you come back from injuries like this, you're going to ease your way back into it. They're not going to throw you into the fire. You're only going to play a few minutes here, a few minutes there. So with that being the case, maybe we'll start to see a little more out of him, but –
He about to play some G League games. He started G League practice today.
Yeah, I know. I remember you saying that earlier, and I'm anxious to see that. I'm anxious to see him in action, period.
I'm not about to second guess no NBA trainers, man. They're not about to throw no guy out there on the Achilles not ready. I'm flat out. And, like, I'm in that video, I see a lot of explosiveness. Like I said, the resistance band. I'm not seeing what y'all are seeing. I'm really not. I don't see it.
See, the thing with me is not so much as that the scouts are going to throw him out there when he's not ready. The thing with me is that he may not get back to where we're expecting him to get to. And
yeah, see, I'm not trying to get into all that because that's an unknown. That's something that I'm not trying to get into. I'm just saying, is he healthy and ready to play basketball? I say yes. I don't know. Is he going to be Boogie again? That's not what I'm saying. That I don't know.
That's my concern. Into. That's my biggest concern. It's not whether Boogie's ready or not. It's whether, well, let me put it this way. It's not whether DeMarcus Cousins is ready or not. It's whether Boogie is ready or not. The Boogie that we know, is that Boogie ready or is that Boogie even going to make a sighting? Is he somebody that's going to come back
to get into it is because we don't even know if we'll ever see that Boogie again, let alone is he going to be 100% back this year. That's why I'm not trying to get into it, because we don't know if that Boogie will ever be back. We don't ever see guys come back as they self after Achilles injury.
And that's I feel like that's where the discrepancy is here. That's where the disconnect is. Some people are seeing it from a standpoint of, oh, yeah, he's healthy, so he can go out there and play. But other guys are seeing it from a standpoint of he's not healthy because he doesn't look the way that he used to look.
But that don't mean you're not healthy, though. You could be healthy and just not – Derrick Rose is healthy right now. He's not the Derrick Rose we used to know, but he's healthy. He's 100. He's good to go. Like, we might not see Boogie again. I mean, it is what it is.
I don't really feel like that's a good comparison, though, because the reason why D-Rose... Yeah, I understand. D-Rose is healthy, but D-Rose is not mentally healthy. To me, it all of that has to come into being healthy.
I think he is.
He's getting there now. This is the closest we've ever seen him as to being that old D-Rose. Yes.
I think all the injury shit is behind him. I think he put that behind him. When he dropped 50, he realized, like, okay,
I can still do this. Right. In the tank.
Like, I think Derrick Rose is fine. I think D Rose is cool, man.
Me too. And the best thing about D Rose is, not to go off on a tangent there, but D Rose is still young, man. He's still got a lot of basketball to be played. And that's what really excites me about him, is that he's shaking off some of these cobwebs and really realizing, I'm still that nigga and I can still contribute on a high level. And I got a lot of basketball to play. But, yeah, man, that's I feel like with Boogie, we'll see how that plays out here within the next couple of weeks. I'm definitely anxious to see him in a G League.
I've been telling y'all for weeks, Boogie was on schedule to actually be cleared to play on Christmas, which is still a fact that he could play on Christmas. But the Warriors are saying, no, you're not playing on Christmas. They're saying probably first of the year. That's still the timetable. But that's precautionary. He could play in – Two weeks away.
Yeah,
he could play on Christmas if they wanted to, and he definitely wants to, but it's not gonna happen.
Yeah, I just like you said, I feel like you're looking at it from a standpoint which most other people should be looking at it from. It's not so much as will he get to where we need him to be, or does he look the way that he used to look. It's whether he's healthy. And that's an extremely thin line for, I guess, the audience. People are jumping back and forth across that line and not really, I guess, sticking to one side. And me being one of those people as well, that's it. Just with me, I'm seeing it more from that getting back to Boogie standpoint. I don't care. I don't really care if he's healthy personally. To me, I want to see what Boogie we're going to get back. And I don't want him to come back and look rusty and people be like, I mean, bro, he just coming off that injury and he going to get back to where he going to be. Just give him some time. Like, nah, if he's healthy, I'm not trying to hear that. Give him some time in order for him to become Boogie again. Granted, it's going to take a little while with me being a basketball player. I know that you can't just jump back into the fire and be who you were. It's not going to happen that fast. But also, I'm not going to give him a pass for seeing the way that he moves. If he's not moving the way that he used to move or being able to make certain plays that he used to be able to make, then I'm going to be a little caught off guard by it, because I'm not expecting him to go out there and go for 30 and 30 or 30 and 20 or anything like that. Boogie could go out there and literally score 10 points, 7 points. As long as I see that he still can do what he could do prior to the injury, I'll be completely content. I don't care if he goes out there and goes 2 for 40, 2 for 30. As long as I'm seeing that he can still make those moves, okay, I can be content with that. That's perfectly fine. I know you got to shake off the rust. I just want to see that you're able to do some of the things that you were able to do prior.
I've seen it. That's what I'm saying. Them workouts, that ain't the one that I posted. That's not the only workout that
That's different, though, bro. I got to see it in action. Like, it's certain things. Like, fine, Boogie's a big body. Everybody knows that when Boogie gets the ball in the post, he's a problem. That's what I'm looking to see. I'm looking to see if he can still move off of that Achilles the way he could. Can he still be a force in that post? Because everybody knows with that Achilles, that holds a lot of weight with your body. Like, everybody knows that. So when it comes to, like, backing down and actually aggressive backing down or being strong in a post and having your stance and getting your footwork together, a lot of that goes into that Achilles. So I'm expecting to see, or I'm anxious. I'm not expecting. I'm anxious to see how effective he can be in that aspect of his game. Simple as that. That's all I'm really looking for from Boogie.
Boogie gonna eat, man. I don't know if he gonna be the Boogie we know him as, but Boogie gonna eat, man. He gonna get a solid contract at the end of this year. He gonna leave as an NBA champ. He gonna be fine.
We're gonna see, man. We're gonna see, but let's jump into our next topic, man. This topic here is actually a new topic that it was actually Sam's idea, which I was extremely ecstatic about when he brought it across, brought the idea to me. The particular topic is something that we'll do here frequently. We'll try to do it every episode, whether it be this particular sport in the NBA or NFL. We may even do college football, college basketball type things. But this particular segment is called Blind Resume. So what we do is on our Pick and Roll Podcast Facebook page, we also posted it on our Instagram. We're posting two separate resumes of two individual players who play the same position and are pretty much similar as far as, I guess, their popularity. And that may not always be the case. We may choose a guy that's less popular against a guy that's popular if the numbers add up. But here's what we have. Blind Resume 1 was an NBA player who averaged 22.1 points per game, 11.7 rebounds per game, 3.9 assists per game, also shot 54% from the field. He was a one-time MVP, 11-time All-Star, 5-time first-team All-NBA, 5-time second-team All-NBA, also a one-time NBA rebounding leader. Now, that was, to me, a pretty stellar resume. That looked like something that was definitely impressive as far as I'm concerned. Now, Blind Resume 2 had an NBA player, also played the same position as this player. He averaged 17.8 points per game. 10 rebounds per game. That's 10 even. He averaged 3.7 assists per game. He shot 50% from the field. So, as you can see, all of those categories thus far are beneath Resume 1. Now, this is where it begins to take a bit of a turn toward Resume 2. Resume 2 is a one-time NBA champion, also a one-time MVP. That goes along with Resume 1. You have a one-time Defensive Player of the Year for Resume 2, 15-time All-Star, 4-time First-Team All-NBA, which is less than Resume 1, 3-time Second-Team All-NBA, also less than Resume 1, but 9-time First-Team All-Defense, 3-time Second-Team All-Defense, and a 4-time Rebounding Champion in the NBA. So, based off of what our fans had to say, Resume 2 was the favorite here. Resume 2 won this by a count of 66% to 34%. Now, if you're pretty knowledgeable in basketball or you know anything about basketball, you pretty much know you. I know one of these guys you can probably for sure point out, that being Resume 2. Resume 1, most guys probably can get, but it may take guys who know a little more about basketball. But to go ahead and reveal the players, Resume 1 is who, Sam?
Charles Barkley.
And Resume 2 is?
Kevin Garnett.
So, that being said, you've got a guy in KG, Resume 2, who won this particular matchup against a guy like Charles Barkley. Now, that brings us to a fairly interesting conversation here. A lot of people consider Charles Barkley to be top three, top four of his position. Some guys, most guys, I'll say, have him above a guy like Kevin Garnett. I personally, in this situation, would have voted for a Resume too, so I would have went with Kevin Garnett. Do you believe that Kevin Garnett is a better player than Charles Barkley, Sam?
It's close, man. I really... I'm going to lean towards, yeah, to be honest. I think... Ow! It's close, man. It's really, really close. It's closer than the resume. With the resumes, it's not close at all, though.
I agree. With the resumes, it's a landslide, and that's why it turned out to be that way, and that's why we did it blind.
Yeah, that's what this is going to do. It's going to let you know how much the eye test really plays and how much popularity really plays into a player. Or winning. I feel like a lot of people might have looked at that NBA championship and been like, oh, he ain't got a ring.
That's a fact. I mean, I'm also one of those people who I personally believe KG doesn't get the respect that he deserves. I think that KG is better than a Charles Barkley, and it's not by a lot. It's not by a lot at all. But I just think that KG.
They did a lot of similar.
They did.
And KG's just, he got them inches on him.
Yeah.
And they're real similar.
They're extremely similar. I feel like the only major takeaway is the fact that KG is that much larger. Because if we're being honest, if you give Charles Barkley those inches that KG got, we might be looking at the best power forward of all time in a Charles Barkley. He's definitely going to be one of those guys that is going to be an all-defensive guy. Because he was guarding centers out there, being 6'6". I mean, he did a lot of things that most people his size would not be capable of doing. So, to me, if you give him that size, yeah, we're probably looking at the best power forward of all time. But granted, you can't add size onto anybody. So, with that being the case, I think I do give the edge to a KG.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And it's strictly because of size. I don't really think there's much else that separates the two.
They both had the solid mid-range.
Yeah, man. They could both in their prime, they grabbed the board, push it full court, coast to coast, like it wasn't nothing. I'm telling you, this was an extremely difficult pick for me, mostly because I knew the two guys. And like you said, with the resume alone, you got to go KG. You got to go KG off the resume because it's so much better. But when you strip away the fact that you don't know who these guys are and you actually put a name to it, it's like, oh, I don't know now, because you know what Charles has done. You got the eye test of being able to see exactly what he's done. So having his name attached to it, it brings a different dynamic. But, yeah, man, this is definitely a segment that I'm excited about. I'm excited to touch on this next week and see moving forward who else we can compare and see how our listeners fare with these. But yeah, I felt like this one, easing them into this one, was a bit easy, because even last night we talked in a group chat and I believe it was Matt. He was like, is it bad that I already know who I'm voting for? And I feel like this was one of those ones where you, like I said, if you know basketball, you knew one of the guys. You definitely knew KG, because who else has 9-time first team all NBA? That's not just something, or first team all defense, should I say. That's not something that's just floating around here. It's only, what, three guys, Kobe, KG, maybe two. No, three. Kobe, KG, and I believe Jordan.
Jordan, yeah.
Those are the only three. So, I mean, obviously you knew by the rebounding that it wasn't Kobe or Jordan. So, yeah, I'm anxious to see some other ones. I bet you we'll catch a lot of people by surprise. They'll probably pick somebody and be like, once they figure out the names, they're like, nah, he's not better than him. I guarantee we're going to get a lot of those. But, yeah, man, that pretty much does it for our NBA segment. Let's jump over to college football real quick. It's not really much to touch on here since – we're heading into bowl season. But the biggest takeaway was the Heisman Trophy. We just had the Heisman Trophy, and Kyler Murray came out victorious, which I felt like that definitely I don't know, man. I know how I feel about it, but I'm kind of iffy about the outcome. You think Kyler should have won the Heisman?
Yeah, I do. Just based off of how they picked the Heisman, you had to go with Kyler. I feel like Tua not taking any fourth quarter snaps all year really killed his chances of winning the Heisman. I kind of feel like on one hand, you shouldn't get penalized for beating the shit out of people. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, it's not Kyler Murray's fault that his defense is trash and he has to play in the tight game every week. He had more Heisman moments. So, I mean, I knew Kyler Murray was going to win, especially after Tua left the conference championship game.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was over for him winning the Heisman, even though he was the front runner all year. One bad game, we know that's how it goes.
Yeah, to me, that
especially
was
that late.
Yeah, that was my biggest thing. Is I felt like that's when it definitely took a turn in Kyler's favor. All throughout the year, like you said, Tua barely played any fourth quarter. So with that being the case, Kyler already had a leg up statistically. Then you throw in the fact that Kyler Murray just led his team to the conference championship, beating the team that gave them their only loss. Then you look at a guy like Tua, who's in a situation where he's playing against a Georgia team that he's not necessarily playing great against. They're actually losing. Then he turns around and gets hurt, and his backup comes in and wins the game. We don't necessarily know that if Tua stayed in that game, if they would have won. I actually believe Alabama would have lost that game for the simple fact that Georgia had a game plan, and their game plan was schemed around Tua. Bringing in a guy like Jalen Hurts, they didn't have any game plan. They weren't expecting to see Jalen Hurts long term. They may have been expecting to see him situational, but not over a long course of a game or a half. So that, to me, is what really won Alabama the game, is that Georgia prepared a certain way, and that all went out the window when Tua got hurt. So I don't necessarily believe that Tua would have won that game, and that, to me, would have also hurt his Heisman chances. But it just really, like you said, it goes into how you pick the Heisman. It's not always the best player that wins the Heisman. It's the player who shows that he's had the best performances. Like you said, Heisman moments. Kyler had many more Heisman moments than Tua did. So
Tua didn't even have a chance to have any Heisman moments.
That's a fact. His best chance at having a Heisman moment was against LSU, and that was so much of a blowout that he didn't even get a chance to.
Yeah, he had no chances at Heisman moments. It's not Kyler Murray's fault, so you can't. It's tough to penalize him, too. I mean, the way they picked the Heisman, it was just obvious that it was going to be Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I believe that Kyler Murray definitely deserved the Heisman, but I will go on record and say that Tua is the best college football player. He's definitely the best college football player, but Kyler was much more deserving of the Heisman, and that's because of his resume, and like you said, more Heisman moments. So that, to me, I believe, yeah, they got it right by the picks. And another big thing to take away from this was actually the closest Heisman race in Heisman history. Tua had the most votes ever by a second, a runner-up guy ever of all time. So that just goes to show you that even without playing most of his fourth quarters and not finishing his conference championship, how close Tua was to actually still winning a Heisman.
If he would have had one Heisman moment,
he wins it.
Been a Heisman, yeah. And that's crazy considering, like you said, the amount of stats he missed out on not playing in fourth quarters is crazy.
It's ridiculous.
He'll still be in the conversation to win the Heisman in itself. That's still special. I mean, you're going to get a trophy for it, clearly, but, I mean, people going to always remember that.
Yeah, that's a fact. And I felt like it was definitely deserving of him to have the second most votes in Heisman history just because of the type of season that he had. I mean, like we said, he's hands down the best player in college football, especially the best quarterback in college football. But, I mean, his best opportunity at having a Heisman moment would have been not getting injured in that Georgia game and leading them to a comeback. If he leads Alabama to a comeback against Georgia, it's his Heisman. He wins it.
Period.
But it just didn't happen. So, I mean, like I said, I believe they got it right. So let's stay here a little bit. Let's still stay on this Tua conversation, but let's switch gears just a tad bit. If you paid attention to the Heisman ceremony, you saw that he was actually on a scooter. He's been riding a scooter ever since his injury and having surgery, but he's also in a boot. Do you think that this is a concern for Bama moving forward, getting ready for this bowl game?
Absolutely not. You don't want that guy to put no pressure on that until game time. If he's going to play, let's keep you off of that thing as long as possible. That's not a concern. The game ain't for two more weeks,
mm-hmm.
three more weeks. Yeah, come on, baby. Get off of that. Sit on down.
My thing is not so much as wanting to rush him back. My thing is, do you believe that he's going to be ready by then?
I don't know, just like they don't. But I'm saying, until you find out, you can keep him off of it.
I don't think that it's necessarily a major concern. One, for the simple fact that in the first game you got Oklahoma. It's not really a defense that you worry about. Regardless of who your quarterback is, I don't think that you're worrying about an Oklahoma defense.
Man, Hurts can't throw, man.
Did you see that pass he threw against Georgia?
Man, Hurts can't
throw. The game-winning pass that bad. I'm telling you, he might have been working. History has shown that he's not a good thrower, but we don't know how well he's been working. Now, for one, that's a reason why it's not a concern, is because Oklahoma's defense isn't scary to me. Two, another reason why I'm not concerned when you're Bama is because now Oklahoma's got to try to scheme against two quarterbacks. They don't know who's going to line up out there. They don't. Now you can't put together a game plan and be like, this is exactly what we're going to do, and we're going to work at this until we perfect it. This is what's going to happen. This is exactly what defense we're going to run, and we're going to stick to it. Obviously, you can't do that. You look at a team like Georgia. Georgia went in thinking that. We know we're going to see Tua. This is who we're going to see. This is who we're scheming for. So this is the defensive scheme we're going to run. Then here comes Jalen Hurts. Unexpectedly, and now everything that you just worked on preparing for this game is completely out the window, and now we don't know what we're doing. We end up losing the game. That's a Georgia team that's far more talented defensively than an Oklahoma team. So to me, that's why I'm not concerned if I'm Bama. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not concerned for that reason. I think Tua is going to be ready. I think he's going to be ready. I don't really think it's going to be an issue as to can he play or is he too injured to play. For one, me knowing Bama's not going to put him out there if he's not ready, for one. And for two, if he's not ready, I believe they can beat an Oklahoma team with Jalen Hurts. I think it'll be far closer, but I think they could still win that game. And with that being the case, I think they'll win that game with or without Tua. Championship time, I definitely think Tua will be ready by the actual national championship. That's a fact.
And I don't know where we went crazy, but we about to set a record today.
Time-wise?
Yeah.
Let me see what else we got. Oh, yeah, because we still got NFL and everything to talk about. Yeah, we still got a little bit to talk about, but let's get out of here for a brief break so we can pay these bills real quick. All right, welcome back. We back. Now let's jump into this NFL, man. First topic, I know it's probably not something that Sam's probably too fond of talking about, but it has to be discussed, man. The Bears put on a performance that we have yet to see this year. They've done something that nobody else has been able to do. And that's keep the Rams out of the end zone. They completely stifled the Rams' offense. And with somebody or with a team or an offense that's that high-powered, you can only help but think that this Bears defense is something special. So, my, I guess the question that everybody's wondering is this Bears defense good enough to contend? Do you believe so, Sam?
Yeah, I think they got a great defense. But I will say this. They had an extra defender out there in that game. And her name is Mother Nature. My guy, Jared Goff, he just couldn't throw that cold ball, man. If you watch that game, he was just off target all night. Sometimes the defense really wasn't even there. I'm not trying to take nothing away from the Bears. They definitely have a great defense. But I just feel like it was still a combination of the cold and the D. Like, I feel like the cold had a lot to do with some of those.
I agree 100%. And for that reason, I say the Bears are not ready to contend. I think that they are ready to contend, just not this year. I feel like their defense is stellar. It's top-notch. But I don't feel like their offense is quite good enough for them to be able to contend for a championship. Granted, we've seen teams who don't really have that great of an offense win Super Bowls, get to a Super Bowl. But in this day and age in the NFL, you got to have an offense that can put up some points. And with the Bears not having home field advantage, like you said, Mother Nature played a huge factor into that. You see these Rams in Los Angeles, this is a completely different ball game. They're going to find a way to get in that end zone. You better believe it, multiple times.
There's no way in hell you holding the Rams to 6 points in regular in fair weather.
I agree 100%. Seeing as the Bears don't have any home field advantage heading into these playoffs, barring something crazy happening. Yeah, I just don't think that they're fit to contend this particular year. Now, another question is, do you think the Rams should be worried with the lack of offensive success? I know that it's not this isn't something that's happened prior, but do you think that they should be worried?
No, just for the same reason I just stated. It was a lot, it had a lot to do with the cold. So I'm not too concerned. Although I would be a tad bit concerned with us not being able to get the running game going.
That's exactly what I was going to touch on. I was definitely going to say, I understand that y'all weren't able to get in the end zone, but y'all's offensive struggles are starting to become a little more glaring. This is, I believe, 3 weeks in a row that Todd Gurley hasn't seen the end zone rushing. That to me, I don't know. I don't know why he's not getting as many touches as I believe he should.
Could it be saving for the playoffs? I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe. It's
a possibility.
That's definitely a tactic that I believe could be the case, especially seeing as moving forward, you don't have a guy like Cooper Kupp to expand the field the way that you used to. Now that they've moved Robert Woods more inside, he's still effective, but it's now changing the dimensions of your offense. Now, with the guy that y'all got calling the shots in McVay, he's an offensive mastermind. So it's hard to really doubt what he's doing, but I feel like the most logical explanation is definitely rest. They don't want to run Gurley into the ground, or they don't want to give him the ball a certain amount of time. There aren't even that many times we've seen Gurley line up and pound teams away this year. Most times it's been he gets a couple carries here, a couple carries there, and now he's lined up in the slot, and he's matched up against a linebacker, or we're getting him out in the open space and throwing him the ball. I feel like this could be more of a tactic because you look at last year. Y'all were effective last year offensively. But then come playoff time, things changed because they were able to scheme against y'all. They had seen what you guys were trying to do all throughout the year. And they prepared for it and came out and executed and were able to change the way that you guys wanted to run your offense. Now, with McVay being as smart as he is, I think that it's mostly due to that. He learned from last year. So he's not going to show everything. He's going out here with a certain game plan during a regular season. Now, come playoffs, he might line you up and give you all girly all night. Now what you going to do? You came out here scheming for our spread offense, but now we didn't line up and went to an I. How you going to act?
Yeah, that would be nice, because then I think that could guarantee a chip.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I don't really put much past McVay. I'm a huge fan of him offensively. I mean, and if you think about it, y'all got the defense to be able to do this. Like, it's not like y'all can. I mean, I feel like it's that would be the ideal situation for y'all.
That would be crazy if we just
y'all have a great defense
turn into a game managing team.
Just like, yes, y'all completely switch y'all's aspect and y'all start running y'all's offense like the Cowboys with a more effective quarterback that can throw the ball when y'all need him to. Oh, let's control the clock and our defense gonna go out there and do what it does. Let's keep him off the field, keep him fresh, and we're gonna go out here and do what we do. I feel like that's the ideal situation for y'all. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like you said, it could be rest. And that seems to be the most logical answer. But let's talk about another team who's had a bit of a hard time offensively here lately. They've been struggling as well. And it's rare because these are two teams who were so explosive to start the year off. Now we've seen them sputter a little bit. More this team than y'all. That team being the New Orleans Saints. We saw them struggle against the Cowboys. I felt like that was mostly because the Cowboys are the type of team that it takes to beat a Saints team. They play primarily man-to-man. So they line you up, beat you up on the outside, but their defensive front can get to the quarterback in time enough for them not to be able to run a lot of down-the-field routes. So that benefited the Cowboys in that aspect. But then you turn around this week, and you match up against the Buccaneers. Excuse me. Now, the Buccaneers, division team, so it's always going to be somewhat of a good game. But their offense struggled yet again. Could this be a sign of things to come? Is the offense wearing down? What's your whole take on the Saints' offense now not looking nearly as prolific as it was?
I think it's a similar situation to the Rams as far as you got your playoff spot locked up. It's more about guys just I don't know, man. Maybe they looking ahead to the playoffs. I don't know, because yeah, their situation ain't the same as ours. No, it's not.
Yeah, I don't believe it's the same. But I think that it is a product of them looking forward, looking ahead into the playoffs, because at this point, there's nobody really chasing them besides y'all. But you would think that that would be more motivation for them to kick it into gear. Now, I feel like now, this upcoming week is when we'll actually see that Saints offense get back to where they were, because now that they see – y'all took a loss to the Bears, which pretty much gave them.
Yeah, they're number one.
They gave them the number one again. They gave them less like a bailout almost. They're like, man, we just lost to Dallas and the Rams. Now they're number one. We're going to have to go out there. We played them once already, but we had them at home. And we go out there to L.A., it's going to be a different type of ball game, man. Now you're back in a position to where you control your own destiny. You win out, you get home field advantage. You're in that dome. You don't got to worry about going anywhere else. You're where you're most comfortable. The road to the Super Bowl goes through you. So I think that will get them back to where they need to be. Because I put it like this, if they lose another game, it's over. They're not going to the Super Bowl. It's already questionable whether they're going to the Super Bowl or not, because I personally don't think they can beat the Rams twice. They got to hope for an upset in order for them to get to the Super Bowl. But they're definitely, to me, not winning a game in Los Angeles against the Rams. It's not happening.
Nope.
I just don't see it happening. So, like I said, I expect to see them get back on path this week. But the biggest thing to me is these last couple of weeks that I've seen the Saints, they just haven't gotten Kamara involved the way that he needs to be involved. And like you said that the situation isn't the same, but it could be similar. It could be that they're doing the same thing with Kamara that you guys are doing with Gurley. Not to the same extent, because you guys are far more built to Smash Mouth and Force Feed Gurley throughout the playoffs. Mm-hmm. As opposed to them, they're not built to do that. They've got a guy in Drew Brees who, as far as them being successful, it's going to have to be on his shoulders. So I'm not necessarily sure why they're not getting Kamara involved. Even when they played against Dallas, they did a lot more with Mark Ingram than they did with Kamara. So I'm confused about that. I'm not really sure what's going on there. And they're just, I don't know, they're going to have to find a way to get him involved. But I'm not too nervous about him. I think they'll bounce back this week. But staying on the topic of offenses, let's talk something that we talked this early in the season, and you pretty much broke it down and said, this guy's not ready. He's not ready to lead a team. If you throw him out there now, you're setting him up for failure, is what you said. That guy being Lamar Jackson. Now, you made this statement early on in the season. I believe it was right before week one, heading into week two as well. Now we've seen a completely different dimension of this Ravens offense with Lamar Jackson at the helm. So my question to you is, we know he wasn't ready early in the season, but do you think Lamar Jackson is ready to lead the Ravens now?
I mean, he's looking like he is right now this year. But again, there's no film out there. So usually those guys, they usually do ball early. Then I'm not sure what he'll look like next year. But right now, I think, yeah, he probably is the best option for them.
I agree. I think Lamar Jackson is ready to lead these guys. I was a little hesitant to give him the nod. But after seeing him against the Chiefs this past weekend, he's ready. And the biggest reason why he's ready is because he's in a situation unlike any other young quarterback. There hasn't been a quarterback in quite some time who's come into the NFL and taken over a team his rookie year that's had a defense this strong to rely on. There were mistakes that he made throughout that game that if any other rookie quarterback makes that mistake, the game's over. They automatically lose. It's a wrap. But time and time again, his defense has – they stepped up to the task. And this past weekend, a crucial, crucial, crucial game. They were playing against the Chiefs, and the Chiefs actually tied the game up. And the Ravens have the ball. They're trying to march down to either get a field goal or at best just run a clock out and go to overtime. Lamar fumbles the ball. Lamar fumbles. Chiefs get it. And it just looks like it's over. It looks like it's a wrap. Well, their defense steps up, doesn't allow a touchdown, forces a field goal. Kicker misses the field goal. So, like I said, Lamar's situation is far different than any other rookie quarterback we've seen, which to me makes it a lot easier for him. He's a guy that can go out and make mistakes and not get crucified for it because he's got a defense that's going to bail him out. He can go to the sideline while right after making a mistake, his coaches can sit him down. Look, this is what you did wrong. Look at this right here. Don't worry about what's going on out there right now. Our defense is going to take care of it. This is what you did wrong. Next time you see this, look for this. And you move on from that. And I feel like Lamar's a guy who's mentally strong enough to get over those mistakes. And I think he'll be good to go. So, yes, I do believe Lamar Jackson is ready to lead them Ravens. I believe that wholeheartedly. But, yeah, man, that pretty much does it for our NFL segment. Now, before we get out of here, let's touch on one quick college basketball topic, and that is Gonzaga. Gonzaga lost to Tennessee. Now, that was a pretty good game. I mean, it not really much that you can take from it. You can't say that Gonzaga didn't come to play. They came to play. They played ball. It was a great game. Went down to the wire. I don't know. I don't really think that anybody can make any excuses for Gonzaga this game. It was a hard-fought game. So, with Gonzaga pretty much playing great ball and Tennessee also playing good. My question to you, Sam, is do you believe that Tennessee is a legit contender moving forward?
They look to be so far, but, I mean, the NCAA non-conference schedule is usually always, like, similar to NBA in the sense of the wins and losses don't normally tell you much about the teams. Like, it's kind of weird. Like, you really can't explain it unless you watch college basketball. Non-conference, I don't want to say they don't mean anything, but it's like
there's two different teams.
Yeah, when teams get into conference play, they're not the same guys that they were. Like, we've seen teams like UConn that one year, they won the title. They got knocked off by some horrible teams.
They struggled earlier.
And then into the season, they're winning the title. So, I mean, and then last year, we saw Arizona State. They rose all the way to number one. And I was telling people, don't buy the hype. Conference play will come around. These teams, they level out.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, by the end of the year, did they even dance?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I think they was like a 10 or a 9 seed, though, barely. And they was ranked number one in the country for a couple weeks during non-conference.
Yeah, I do remember that.
It's just non-conference is weird. They look like a contender now, but I wouldn't bet on them being around at the end.
Only time will tell. Only time will tell. I agree 100%. I think that at this point, they showed everything that most teams would like to see from their ball club. They, down the stretch, look really good. What's his name?
Schofield.
Yeah, Admiral Schofield. He looked like how we expected him to look. He stepped up to the plate and made the big shot when it needed to be and had a great ball game. He had 30, I believe, and he balled. So with you having a guy like that leading you, it definitely looks like you're ready to be a contender. But as Sam said, that's not nothing that you see now is a foregone conclusion. You can see an amazing team right now. And come conference play, you'd be looking at this team like, well, how did they beat Gonzaga? These boys is trash. But like you said, I mean, you can be two different ball clubs throughout the year. So we'll see down the stretch heading into conference play just how good this team is. Because, I mean, you got to think, they're not in a cupcake conference. They'll see a team like Auburn. Auburn's a good ball club.
They are a good ball club. Pretty good this year.
Exactly. Then you got UK. You know what UK is going to do. That's another team. I mean, it's not going to be – you got Mississippi State as well. So it's some good teams in the SEC. So we'll definitely see what Tennessee is made of. If they can weather the storm and come out on top of that SEC – yeah, I would say that they'll be a solid contender, but yeah, well, like I said, only time will tell. But yeah, man, before we jump into some pick'ems real quick, Sam, we got Saturday, we got number 17 Villanova at number 1 Kansas. Now, this was a far more attractive game a couple of hours ago. So, I mean, with Nova losing a Penn,
that don't change my pick.
It don't really change mine either. Go ahead. Who'd you have?
I got Kansas, but I think Villanova is going to show people that they are much better than they've been playing.
And but there's
no way they beat them at Allen Fieldhouse.
I actually got Nova with the upset. I think this is this is the game that Nova shows that we are still a good team. And we still got – this is the game that I feel like takes them over that edge. Like, right now I feel like they're at a point where they're just, like, they're beat up. They're – I guess in a boxing analogy, they're on the ropes. They're about to go down. They dodge a punch and throw a counter and knock the opponent out. I feel like this is one of those type of games. So I'm taking Nova in a close one. Next game, also Saturday, number 4 Gonzaga, number 12 Carolina. I know I got I mean, that ain't a close one. Who you got, Sal?
I almost threw up about to say this.
No! No!
I got Carolina getting their first signature win of the year.
Oh, no!
I almost threw up saying that shit, man.
They are in the Dean Dome, man. That's what made it a little spooky for me, but I'm taking Gonzaga. My heart can't let me pick Carolina.
Mine either, and I kind of didn't want to pick against Gonzaga considering they just lost, but Carolina due for a big win.
That's true. I'm really not trying to hear them Carolina fans mouth. Oh, we beat Gonzaga and y'all couldn't. I'm not really trying to hear that.
Who cares?
So,
I'm hoping
Gonzaga pulls that out. But, yeah, I got Gonzaga. Let's go NBA. Thursday, we got the Lakers at the Rockets. Who you got?
Lakers.
Lake Show. Let's get it. Everybody knew.
Them Rockets are laughable.
Oh, they're looking terrible. But, I'm taking a Lake Show. Sunday, we got Raptors at Nuggets. This is an appealing game because the Nuggets coach has come out on multiple occasions and made some very bold statements about teams playing them at home. He said, I don't care if it's the Warriors. I don't care if it's the Raptors, the Celtics. You can come in here, but you're going to take this L. That's exactly what he said. So, Raptors at Nuggets. Who you got?
I'm taking the Nuggets. I think Jokic is going to get busy.
I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at that at all, but I'm taking the Raptors. I got the Raptors. I think the Raptors will come out and be like, this is a slap-in-the-mouth type game. Like, nigga, who are you talking to? What you mean? Well, we going to come in here and hold this L. We all right. We got something for you. So I feel like this is going to be one of those type of games. I'm taking the Raptors, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the Raptors win big. Last two. Let's go NFL. Chargers at Chiefs. Who you got?
I'm taking the Chargers.
I like the Chargers as well. I feel like the Chiefs got far too close to losing last week. I think this week it catches up to them and they lose to the Chargers. Chargers are a sneaky good ball club that a lot of people aren't talking enough about. Chargers are a good ball club. They've got an exceptional defense with a talented offense. If they can get Melvin Gordon back, they will definitely be. They'll be a good ball club. They'll be ready to go. So yeah, I got the Chargers as well. Last game, Patriots at Steelers. Who you got?
Give me the Steelers. The Patriots suck on the road.
This game to me depends on if James Conner is healthy or not. There is speculation that he will not play against the Patriots. So if James Conner plays, give me the Steelers. If not, give me Tom and them boys. So I'm a bank on him playing. So I'm going to go with the Steelers in that one. But, yeah, man, that pretty much does it for this episode. Was there anything else you wanted to tell the people before we got out of here, man?
I just seen some crazy shit just now.
What was that?
Man, DC's G League team is called the Go-Go. Bro, they call the capital city Go-Go. I was just not Xing out this ESPN hat. Like what? But yeah, that ain't that major. That's it.
All right, man. That pretty much does it. That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
man.
They gotta do better.
But yeah, man, that pretty much does it for this episode of the Pick and Roll Podcast. Like I said, if you haven't already, go to our Facebook page, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, follow us on Twitter, find us anywhere you can, man. Just you know. We love for our fans and our fans, our listeners and our audience to engage with us, man. If you follow me or Sam on any social media, reach out to us. Let us know what y'all want to see on the Pick and Roll Podcast, what y'all want to hear. Just let us know.
Make sure y'all look out for them polls of the week and those blind resume polls too.
Cast yes.
Those votes.
Yes, we definitely need all of y'all's input on that, man. So, yeah, like I said, that pretty much does it for another episode. We'll see y'all back next week. Signing out, it's your boy Ish.
And it's your boy Sam. Appreciate it.
We out.